In 1967, 17-year-old Johnny Erickson Tara took a dive that left her a quadriplegic, dramatically changing her life. And some of you may know her story, some of you may not. But here is a short version of it. She said, "I remember right around my senior year of high school, I prayed, 'Lord, I am not doing this Christian thing right, and I know it. And I don't want to go off to college and defame your name, your good name, and smear your reputation. I know it's about far more than just me. So do something, Lord, in my life to jerk it right side up, because I'm really living this life wrong.'" Just a few weeks after high school graduation, she said, "I was preparing to head off to college. My sister Kathy invited me to go to the beach for a swim. I swam out of that raft, athlete that I was. I didn't even touch bottom. Hoisted myself up into it, and then took this really stupid dive into what ended up being extremely shallow water. I snapped my head back when I hit bottom, and it crunched my four cervical vertebrae, severing my spinal cord. And there I was, lying face down in the water, desperately hoping that my sister Kathy would notice that I had not surfaced from my dive. Unbeknownst to me, her back was turned to me. She didn't even see me take that dive. But a crab bit her toe, and it surprised her so much that she immediately turned around in the water and screamed to me, 'Johnny, watch out for crabs.' When she did, she saw my blown hair floating on the surface. I was face down, really ready to drown. She came swimming quickly, pulled me off out of the water, and I was never so grateful for fresh air. She saved me. But for what purpose? For what reason? Because now, lying in the hospital, doctors told me that I was going to have to sit for the rest of my life as a quadriplegic without use of my legs or even my hands. I remember thinking, 'God, is this your idea of an answer to a prayer to be drawn closer to you? If it is, you are never going to be trusted with another one of my prayers again. I mean, I am new, a new Christian. How could you have taken me so seriously?' And I sank into depression." Today, the passage that we are dealing with is dealing with what happens when things don't go our way. And Paul discusses the trials he faced and how he responded to those trials. So at this time, I'm going to invite Susie Adamson to please come and read the passage for us.
The scripture reading this morning is from Philippians chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. "I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Susie. Good morning, everyone. If you are here for the first time, my name is Roman Gonzalez, and I am the assistant pastor here at Ironworks. And today, I want to encourage you, and this is kind of my goal, my purpose, I want to encourage you to adopt a gospel-centered perspective on suffering, finding joy in the gospel's advancement rather than succumbing to a victim mentality. That is my goal. And here is what I want you to take from this sermon. True joy is found in the progress of the gospel, not in the absence of suffering. True joy is found in the progress of the gospel and not in the absence of suffering. And we are going to see this in three parts. First, we are going to consider Paul's journey and how this relates to our own personal journey. Second, we will see the opportunities for gospel progress in Paul and also within us. And third, we will see how gospel progress brings joy, the joy of Christ. So let us begin with the first one, the journey. It's been between 3 to 5 years since the Philippians saw last Paul. During this time, they've heard about some of the challenges he faced. He was arrested and put on trial in Jerusalem, then moved to another city called Caesarea, where he faced additional trials under two governors, Felix and Festus. And then he requested a trial before the emperor, so he was sent to Rome. And on his way to Rome, he survived a shipwreck. When he arrived to Rome, he was put under house arrest. And he is there, waiting for a trial, for his trial before Emperor, probably Emperor Nero. He was also lashed, beaten, stoned. No matter where he went, he facing rivers, robbers, his own people or strangers. Danger was always around the corner. Even without sleep, food, water, shelter. And on top of that, he carried the heavy responsibility of caring for the churches he had planted. What an exciting journey, wasn't it? Pain, danger, anxiety, hunger, etc. So naturally, the Philippians may wonder, how is Paul holding up? How has the loss of his freedom affected the spread of the gospel, the message of Jesus Christ? How is his ministry faring during these conditions? The answer is clear, yet perhaps surprising. Paul is rejoicing in the Lord. Let me ask you this, dear friend, how about your personal journey? How about your personal journey as a father, as a mother, as a spouse, as a professional, as a single, as a divorced, as a student? How are you holding up? How has the loss of so-and-so, think about whatever it is for you, affected or may be affecting the progress of the gospel in your own life? How are you managing under these conditions? And again, Paul's response was that he was rejoicing. And do you know why? Because he knew that true joy is found in the progress of the gospel, not in the absence of suffering. But Paul not only wants to remind them of what happened to him, but also he wants to give the Philippians a framework to understand the significance of his journey and how they should actually understand and make sense of Paul's journey, as well as their journey, as well as our journey. For Paul, things didn't happen randomly. He says, what happened to me has served to advance the gospel. And you know, this is the way we should think about Paul's trials. In verse 1, the phrase when Paul says, I want you to know, brothers, that word want expresses a strong desire. Meaning that Paul is resolved and eager to share this information with them. This principle of interpretation, if we can put it that way. Dear friend, let me ask you another question. How aware are you of what's happening in your life? And how do you make sense of your challenges? Like Paul, who wanted the Philippians to understand his journey, it is important, it is essential for us, for you, to interpret your own experiences in light of the gospel. I have a friend from Westminster. He and I, we both lived in the dorm with two rooms between us, so separating his room and mine. And like most people, he would talk to himself, which is perfectly fine. I know that you also do it. Yeah, so don't think too bad about him. But, you know, the issue was that even with those rooms in between us, I could clearly hear him talking to himself in his room. It was unsettling, to say the least. But what made it really worse and even more creepy was that he didn't just talk to himself out loud, but he would actually use a high-pitched voice when talking to himself. And you can hear him saying, no, that's impossible. It was really creepy. So I would shout from my room, and I would say, David, oh my gosh, I already said his name. Can you cut that? Well, he knows it anyways. It was like, David, you are talking out loud again. And he was just laugh and amused that I had caught him in the act. This little anecdote really teaches us something that we already know. All of us talk to ourselves. All of us have a constant conversation with ourselves. And the point that I'm trying to make is, how do you explain the painful events that happen or come your way? How do you explain that? Do you understand the trials of your lives in this gospel framework, as Paul is saying, the things that happened to me have served for the progress of the gospel. We need to have this gospel understanding to be able to explain what's going on also in our lives. So if you are going to do that, if you're going to talk to yourself, if you're going to explain what's the meaning of the events in your life, please keep it lower, maybe to yourself, and don't use a high-pitched voice. It's creepy. Well, after looking at Paul's challenges and how he made sense of them, let us now explore my second point and see how these tough experiences created opportunities for his message to spread in surprising ways. So the hardship in Paul's journey created unexpected opportunities for the gospel to flourish in three ways, or at least I'm just going to talk about three ways. First, Paul had the opportunity to share Jesus with the imperial guard. The imperial guard was an elite group of Roman soldiers protecting the emperor. That was their task. This elite, numbering between 4,500 to 10,000, would have never been otherwise reached with the gospel. So while under house arrest in Rome, Paul was likely guarded by these soldiers who worked in 6 hours shifts. So over nearly 2 years, he encountered about four different soldiers each day. And this gave him the chance to talk about Jesus widely. So some guards reportedly became followers of his teachings. So as you can see, instead of hindering him, Paul's imprisonment became a powerful catalyst for talking about Jesus throughout the Roman Empire. But the opportunity wasn't only for Paul. The gospel is flourishing because believers also take this opportunity to talk about Jesus. As Paul sits in his cell, his steadfast commitment to the gospel inspire other believers. And as if Paul's confinement has unleashed an army of new messengers, multiplying the gospel's reach beyond his own efforts. This reflects basically the principle from this famous Scottish-American businessman, and he was also a philanthropist, Andrew Carnegie, who played a major role in the expansion of the American steel industry in the late 19th century. He said, "I would rather earn 1% off 100 people's effort than 100% of my own." Pastor and evangelist James Kennedy echoes this idea, saying, it is better to train 10 people to do evangelism than to do the work of 10 people yourself. So like Carnegie and Carnegie's approach to business and Kennedy's approach to evangelism, Paul sees the benefit of multiplying efforts for greater impact. He understands that his chains are not a setback, but a strategic move in God's plan, realizing that although he is physically bound, the gospel is not bound. So we've seen two kinds of opportunities so far. Paul's opportunity to preach to the imperial guard, and the church's opportunity to preach also Christ. Now, if you are this morning here just trying to figure out Christianity, you might think that this thing talking of Jesus is only for religious fanatics. Or if you have been in church for some time now, you might think that this is only for missionaries and evangelists. But let me tell you, gospel progress is much more than that. There is a third way the gospel is flourishing that is maybe less obvious than the two I just mentioned in the text. And it is the gospel flourishing in Paul's own life. The gospel flourishing in Paul's own life. And the thing is that gospel progress isn't just about spreading the message outwardly, but it is also about Christ being formed inwardly as we suffer. In this sense, inward gospel progress is God freely and undeservedly making you more and more like his son, Jesus. And here is the thing. He often uses suffering to bring about this transformation. So how does gospel flourishing look in Paul's own life? Well, Paul consistently put others before himself. He thinks about others before himself in the midst of his sufferings. And let me give you three concrete examples from this chapter one. One, Paul thinks of others' needs before his own needs. And he writes a letter to the Philippians, even in jail. Two, Paul loves the Philippians with Christ-like love. And three, Paul selflessly prays for them. In other words, Paul doesn't make his suffering about himself. He thinks about the need of the Philippians and writes a letter to them. So suffering, although experienced by Paul, is never about Paul himself. How about you? How about us? How should the progress of the gospel look in us? Well, I think it means that you don't make suffering about yourself either when you are going through suffering. It means that when suffering, you think of others first and then about you. I know that this may sound harsh, but please listen. In 2017, it marked 50 years since the incident that left Johnny Erickson Tada confined to a wheelchair. And you know, this woman that knows about suffering, she knows about suffering, write the following thing, and it strikes me how she talks about this. She says, "To me, what is winsome, attractive, and compelling about the way Jesus suffered is that he never made it about himself." Wow. Even after he was beaten and weighed down, while he was carrying the cross on the cross of Calvary, he said to the woman following him, "Don't weep for me." Wow. And he was at the top of moment of his suffering. Then Jesus asked God to forgive the same soldiers who nailed spikes to his hands and feet. He was always more concerned for others than for himself. This is the testimony of the woman who has suffered greatly. Does this describe you? Let me tell you, so many times, this description that I gave you does not describe me at all. At all. You have heard, I've shared with you before that in 2020, when my dad died, I was lacking so much progress, personal progress of the gospel in my own life. A 1 month before he died, he had a stroke that left him in this vegetative state. And you know what I did? I blame my mom. I blame my sister. I blame my brothers for my dad's condition. I said he is not supposed to be in that condition, and you did not take care of him as you were supposed to. So I am at Westminster and decided to fly out to Mexico, thinking, I'm going to Mexico to take care of my dad and to kind of deal with the messiness that my family have created around my dad's health. I realized that I was thinking and talking to myself as the example that I was just telling you about. And I was like, I have been the son who has been trying to be the most supportive of my family. And I would like them to do the things the way I say, because this is the best way, right? We know that. And now they don't want to do what I am telling them to do in terms of taking care of my dad. How insensible they are. How harsh are they being towards me? I am the son that has always been away, the son that always missed daddy's birthday, the son that wasn't there when he was diagnosed, the son that who couldn't cry with him when we was feeling pain. I mean, all those feelings are normal, are natural, are kind of expected. But do you see what I'm saying? What I'm doing actually at that moment? I am playing the victim. That's what I'm doing. I am playing the victim. I wasn't thinking about how my poor mom was processing that the man who was her friend for so many years now was about to die and about to be gone. I wasn't processing how my sister, the only sister that I have, was processing the whole thing, and also my siblings, who may not have the same financial resources that I have. So I was blaming everyone. And you know, this shows you just a little tiny bit of how much gospel progress I was lacking in my own life. And this was just 4 years ago. How about you? Do you also play the victim? Are you telling yourself that your pain is so unique that nobody can understand you? That nobody knows how you are really feeling inside, and therefore making your suffering all about yourself? Are you so self-centered that you don't even think of others, but only you, because you are in pain? You know, suffering will either make you more selfish or more compassionate. It will make you more giving or more stingy. Some people who have suffered a lot are angry at life, and others are most compassionate people, the kindest people that I have known. So that means that suffering in and of itself can't produce gospel flourishment in people's life. In my case, it only showed what there was inside. I wasn't making gospel progress. There was no gospel progress inside me. It was all about my suffering was all about me. I forgot that true joy is found in the progress of the gospel, not in the absence of suffering. Well, after reflecting on the three opportunities that Paul's imprisonment provided, let us move to my third point and consider the joy he experienced from gospel progress. Paul identifies two groups among those preaching the gospel, one with pure motivations and the other with impure motivations. And you know, while it's easy to assume that the first group all of them are true Christians, the second group is also made of believers. And we know this because Paul calls them brothers in verse 14, indicating that they are part of the Christian community. Now, the main point, and I don't have time to show you all the grammar and why they are believers. We will have to do that something another time. But the main point that I believe the text is making here is that they are Christian preachers. They are Christian preachers, genuine believers trying to make Paul's imprisonment even worse. And in a childlike behavior, they boast. Hey, Paul, we are preaching the gospel freely while you are stuck in chains. They are not supposed to be displaying this behavior. They are Christians, come on. So what the text, I believe, is highlighting is that even those who are part of Paul's spiritual family were happy about the bad things that are happening to him. And you can almost sense the feeling of betrayal. And what is Paul's response to them? He does not adopt a complaining mentality against them. He is not saying, poor me, the greatest apostle, the top preacher to the Gentiles, and you, God, are, you know, having all these preachers out there preaching with wrong motivations. He's not saying that. So Paul is facing affliction on top of affliction. He is under arrest first, and also some of his spiritual family are celebrating it. How about that? And what is Paul's responses? How he responds? He rejoiced. He rejoiced that Christ is being known. He didn't even dare to judge his brothers. Dear friends, what are your chains? Are you bound for the sake of Christ? Maybe it is a long medical treatment. Maybe it's a wheelchair. Maybe it is a hospital bed. Maybe you are confined to your own room. Maybe it's taking care of someone you love. Maybe you're bound to a job that you don't enjoy. Do you rejoice that Christ is making you more like him? I will ask you something very important and a kind of a sensitive question. But I hope that you will hear the pastoral tone in my voice and concerns. And I would like to encourage you and even challenge you to please, please, please resist the temptation of adopting a victim mentality in the midst of your suffering. Please. The feeling of victimhood is widespread in our society. And the point that I'm trying to make is that that way of thinking can be translated into our relationship with God as well. The whole world has shifted from a mentality of dignity and honor to a mentality of victimhood. And there are two reasons this mentality is contrary to the gospel. One is that this mentality, the victimhood mentality, is a joy killer. It kills your joy. When people feel victimized, and I'm not down playing true, real victims and the bad things that happen to some people and maybe to some of you, but I'm talking about this ideology. So when people feel victimized, the next step would be feeling anger and a sense of injustice. And that's how I actually felt I got angry with my mom and my siblings when my dad died because I was the victim. This mentality breeds resentment. That's a part of why people today are so angry, polarized, and hostile to one another. So the victim mentality is a joy killer. However, there is a bigger reason I think this is contrary to the gospel. And it is that it offers a victim-based identity. A victim-based identity where people start defining and understanding themselves based on the bad things that happened to them in the past or are happening to them in the present. If you do that, and maybe some of you have already tried, you will see and it will leave you angry and resentful. Adopting a victim-based mentality will leave you disappointed. Jesus, on the other hand, wants to give you an identity that is joyful even in the midst of trials and tribulations. So I beg you, please resist the temptation of adopting this mentality. But at the same time, my dear friends, my church here, I don't want to give you the impression that joy amid hardship is something you can produce by your own or on your own. I'm not saying, come on, just tough it out. Resolve to be joyful today. Ha ha. That's not what I'm trying to say. You and I have tried that method before, and we both know that it doesn't work. It's not like that. The joy Paul speaks of is supernatural joy. It is a joy that is spirit-produced, spirit-fueled, and spirit-originated joy. It is gospel joy. It is the joy of seeing Christ proclaimed to others and being shaped in us, within us. And one must depend on God's Spirit to produce this kind of joy. It is not a joy. It is not produced by trying to be joyful or chasing the feeling of joy. It is produced by focusing on the person of Christ, in seeing him exalted outwardly and inwardly. He is our joy. No man can produce this kind of supernatural joy, only one man, Jesus Christ, who said, for the joy set before him endure the cross, despising its shame. That means that when Jesus Christ was on the cross, enjoy about this, when Jesus Christ was on the cross, he saw you. He saw you and he rejoiced in you. He rejoiced that his suffering not only advanced the gospel, but actually make it possible, ensured that the gospel would succeed. And you know why? Because Jesus also knew that true joy is found in the progress of the gospel, not in the absence of suffering. God bless you.